Betsy Cuffia, thanks for making time.
Thank you for the opportunity, David.
When you ran for the seat in 2014, you said that we were in a state of crisis with the amount of money in politics. Where are we today?
We are still very much in a really severe state of crisis. Michigan actually in 2015 was ranked dead last, 50 out of 50 states, by the Nonpartisan Center for Public Integrity and Global Integrity on our transparency, our accountability, campaign finances, and we're in bad shape. And I think it shows in some of the policy decisions and the situation that Michigan is in right now.
What are some of the problems you see that we've gotten into because of campaign finance issues?
So when I talk about campaign finance, that's really sort of a wonky term. But what it really comes down to is a state government where we have elected officials who are more accountable to their special interest donors and their party bosses who also give money to their campaigns than they are to the voters. And so some of the outcomes that I'm seeing, for example, Michigan has cut state funding to local communities at a higher rate than any of the other 49 states over the last several years, which means cuts, and we're experiencing them, cuts to police, education, basic services, and really impacts the quality of life of our local communities. That's one. Michigan spends more on our prisons than we do on our college or higher education. Michigan spends the least per capita on roads out of all 50 states. We have 20% of the world's surface freshwater right here at our doorstep, one of the most incredible gifts and resources, and yet we continue to allow two of our Great Lakes to be threatened by the unthinkable scenario of a leak in Pipeline 5 under the Straits of Mackinac, and we're not seeing action or leadership or stewardship on those issues by our elected officials. They're very accountable to their special interests and their partisan politics, and less so to the interests of the people of Michigan. Michigan in 2011 became the first state in our country to totally silence our citizens and local officials when they handed over control of cities and school districts to unelected emergency managers. And some of the results we get are, unfortunately, tragically, the poisoning of an entire city, the city of Flint, over 8,000 children with permanent neurological damage and altered lives because of those bad decisions and lack of transparency and accountability. Michigan ranks dead last for transparency and accountability and money in politics, but you wouldn't guess it based on the decisions that are coming, you know, the action or lack of action on these issues by our electeds.
What would you want to accomplish on this campaign finance issue if you were in Lansing?
Well, we need reform. We need transparency. I was so disappointed, honestly. Our governor campaigned, you might remember, on this issue of transparency and accountability, and yet we have a situation where we are one of a handful of states where you as media cannot FOIA the records and communications and emails, and it has been a struggle to get real transparency in this terrible situation with Flint. So certainly changing those laws.
And that's, just to clarify, that's that the state legislature and the governor's office are not under the state's Freedom of Information Act laws.
Correct, which is unusual. Most states are. And we have a situation where we need answers and we need clarity on what decisions were made, when certain things were known. And we can't, you as media are not able to access that. And I think that that is an egregious lack of transparency. We also have a very disappointing situation where in the last few years, the majority in the legislature passed a law against their Republican Secretary of State, Ruth Johnson, who wanted to require transparency for the people who pay for issue ads, those really nasty negative ads that go after candidates without explicitly saying vote or don't vote. And the legislature and our governor, unfortunately, passed a law that did the opposite and put more shadow over who those backers are and what their motivation might be for those messages pro or against an issue. So those are the kinds of reforms that I would be looking for.
One of the things I remember you doing last time around was that you only accepted political contributions from people who lived in the state, you didn't accept money from super PACs or even from the state Democratic Party. Are you doing the same thing this time around?
My campaign continues to be grassroots funded. It's so important to me to walk the walk. This is an easy talking point to talk about how, yes, we need more transparency, we need more accountability. Money in politics is a problem, but it's a very different thing to walk the walk. And so I continue to be committed to being completely funded by individuals. I do not take special interest money from any side, and I don't accept political party money because I know that there are strings attached, and I believe that the citizens deserve someone who is directly accountable to them as the only interest group that really should get priority.
In some ways, it seems as though Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign took some cues from your style of campaigning in a funny way. I mean, with this focus on campaign finance reform, with his emphasis on getting contributions from small donors, how has Bernie Sanders' campaign shaped the way that you're approaching this election?
Well, we certainly were doing, we were taking the approach of real accountability and citizen funding, in my prior campaign, and really about grassroots. I mean, we had over 300 volunteers who were out there with me knocking doors and doing the work. I am really happy that in this election cycle, the issues of accountability and the outsized influence of special interests has been brought to the fore. And we can see it's really resonating. People are concerned with politics as usual. We know it's not working for us. So I continue to do what I believe in. And I will say that we're seeing definitely an upsurge in the number of young volunteers coming out as opposed to past election, who are working very hard, knocking doors, regularly volunteering, and really taking ownership of their future. And that's really exciting to me.
Let's talk a bit about the state legislature's record over the last 2 years since the election in 2014. How would you say the legislature has done overall?
Again, lack of action on Line 5 under the Straits of Mackinac, which is an unthinkable threat to the most precious resource, our Great Lakes. Lack of transparency in that situation is a real concern for me. Continued underfunding, TCAP still gets nearly, I think it's about $2,700 less than school children downstate. We have serious disparities. And so certainly not doing enough, and really I think not really focused on what the citizens are saying. You know, we saw, was that May of 2015 where the voters voted down the roads
proposal
piece? Yes, 80-20, and then the legislature immediately pushed it back through, and it was on the backs of hardworking people, raising the registration fee 20%, raising the gas tax, which disproportionately impacts families. And I'm knocking on doors of people who they're already stretched pretty thin. And so we're not making sure that everybody's paying their fair share and not listening to the voters when they say, don't put this all on us.
Let's talk about some of those individual issues. The state has made some moves on Line 5. There's a pipeline task force that's looking into the line. We know that this week the state got some contractors to look into alternatives to the pipeline, look at other ways to move oil into the region. Where would you like to see the legislature go on this issue specifically?
We need to shut it down. It is simply a risk that we cannot continue to afford to take, especially for, it's a Canadian company and for their profit, but our risk. It's unacceptable. And I have seen a lot of politics back and forth between the players involved. I feel like we need to take decisive action and actually shut the pipeline down.
There is a question about who can actually do that, who can actually shut it down, because the regulation is, a lot of it, because it goes through two states, it's at the federal level. Mm-hmm. Does the state have the power to do that?
The state has an agreement that has to do with the what is it called, riparian rights?
You're talking about the bottomlands?
Right. Yeah, the state certainly has a powerful role to play, and particularly when, we are the Great Lakes state. We have four of the five Great Lakes right here at our doorstep. And so And legislators and our governor have a bully pulpit as the elected officials and the guardians of this Great Lakes state to stand on the rooftops and make sure and shout until this gets taken care of. I mean, we have the owner of Schepler's, Mackinac Island Ferry, has come out against it and saying it is too big of a risk to both our environment and our economy. We have the owner of the Grand Hotel. We have, I believe, dozens of municipalities who have come out and are really calling for action. And I believe that the state has a role to play, and they are lagging in that role.
You brought up disparities in public school funding. One of the things that Larry Inman, the current representative, told me is that that they brought home some additional funding for schools like or school districts like Traverse City Area Public Schools. They're getting twice the amount of increase in school funding per pupil than some of the schools downstate that have more funding than TCAPS. The whole education funding model in the state is complicated. Mm-hmm. What would you do to lessen the disparities between districts when it comes to school funding?
Well, as far as the recent, I think it was a little over $100, we need to understand this. I had a school board member say, you can't cut somebody off at the knees and then, you know, give them a little Band-Aid and tell them that you're getting them ahead. I'm paraphrasing, but essentially that the state has year after year been cutting off our public schools at the knees with underfunding, and then also tying all these strings to every little bit of funding that they want to give. And really, it's sort of the antithesis of local control, wanting to really pull the strings from the state level. So I think we need to fully fund our local public schools, and it should be equitable. A child who happens to be born in a zip code of Traverse City, their education is just as important and just as valuable as a child who's born in, you know, Bloomfield Hills or Birmingham or these places that get significantly more. So yes, it's a complicated formula. Proposal A closed the gap. It used to be a 3-to-1 disparity. Now it's a 2-to-1. We certainly have much more work to do, and I think we need a lot more than lip service and little Band-Aids after, you know, on top of a gaping wound. Because TCAPS is in the position, you know, I worked in TCAPS as a special ed assistant when I was putting myself through college. And I saw, working with some of the youngest children in our schools, year after year, the class sizes kept getting bigger. The social workers were asked to cover two and three elementary schools instead of one. School nurses went away. And then, you know, schools are having to be closed because of this situation. So what we're doing is nowhere near enough. It should be a much higher priority.
And would you look at more fundamental change, you know, in the same way that Proposal A totally redid how school funding worked in the state? Does it have to be shaken at its foundations?
I think, you know, you have to put everything back on the table and say this isn't working, and it's discriminating against children based on their zip code, which could be argued to be a civil rights violation. It rises to the level that we really need to take a strong step back and say, how do we make sure that we are truly investing in our children? You show what you value by where you invest, and a rural child from Kingsley or TCAPS deserves us to make them a top priority.
A little more than a month ago, we found out that one of the big employers in Grand Traverse County is closing the Pugsley Correctional Facility. It's a place that employs, you know, more than 100 people. Mm-hmm. and they're good jobs. They're high paying jobs, you know, that support families. Mm-hmm. Where can this county look to replace those jobs into the future? What are some areas of economic growth that you foresee?
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually had a really good conversation recently, although actually I want to back up and I want to address Pugsley directly. It's over 200 people, including over 100 people in Grand Traverse County, which would be my district. And I know some of those families personally. When I heard that news, I thought of teacher friends that I know whose husbands have worked at Pugsley. And this is a really big impact on them, and I'm concerned some of them may have to move away because of losing these, as you said, good-paying jobs. So it's a very distressing situation. It is an economic hit. I think that Michigan as a whole, we need to really reinvest, and if we would create a lot of jobs in rebuilding our infrastructure. We have some of the worst roads and bridges in the country. There are jobs to be had there if we do it right. I was talking to a local businessman, very successful local businessman, just this weekend, and he's a lifelong Republican who has decided to support me because he respects the way I'm running my campaign and believes that I would be an ethical and hardworking legislator for our district. But he said, you know, we got it all backwards. We just want to keep cutting and cutting. We need to reinvest. We need to reinvest in education. We need to free students up from this student loan debt so that they're free to actually start businesses and stimulate the economy. We need to rebuild our infrastructure. And so those are some areas that I would really look to.
You brought up Flint earlier. What does the state owe the people of Flint?
Well, transparency and accountability would be a good start. Flint, I don't even know where to begin. It's so unconscionable that situation was allowed to occur. The children of Flint deserve every possible support we can give them at this point because their lives have been forever altered, these young children, by this situation. They deserve clean water and rebuilt infrastructure, and that would engender a lot of jobs, and we should make sure that as we're rebuilding, that those jobs are offered to the local population rather than bringing in out-of-area contractors. It's just a really terrible and sad situation, and but yeah, I would certainly start with making sure that they have clean water and some transparency because the trust has been so breached. You know, those citizens were coming to meetings for months, you know this, months and months and months, and holding up the bottles of water and talking about the rashes on their arms and showing this is what my child is going through, and were met with deaf ears. The whole city was run by one person who was appointed by our governor and not accountable to people. And we have a lot of trust to rebuild.
At the same time, you know, the Flint issue, it grew out of a financial problem that's similar to the one in Grand Traverse County. I mean, there are some significant financial problems across the state. It's not just Detroit. It's not just Flint. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up here too. Mm-hmm. You know, where are we going, or how should we approach some of the problems with underfunded pension liabilities, for example? You know, what can we do to make sure that this state is fiscally, you know, strong going into the future?
I mean, and the state has been cutting the revenue sharing to local communities and really contributing to that situation for a very long time. So the state bears a lot of responsibility for the financial crises that some of these communities, municipalities, school districts end up in. You know, you may not know this, David, but I sort of cut my teeth on getting involved in Michigan politics beyond simply voting because of the emergency manager law. When it was a bill, I learned about it, and I was appalled by the lack of transparency, accountability, and checks and balances for one person with that much power. And putting those people wholly and completely in charge to fix everything, that was not a responsible decision to try to go in and fix the problem without the appropriate checks and balances. And in the case of school districts, to put people in charge who don't even have to have any background in education and purely look at it as if it's all about a spreadsheet, you know, spreadsheets. So the state needs to take a lot more responsibility for the fact that we have continually cut funding, as I mentioned right at the beginning, cutting funding, you know, state funding to local communities at a higher rate than any of the other 49 states by a lot. We need to reinvest in our local communities and give them the opportunity to thrive and have basic services and take care of their infrastructure, not put citizens in this situation.
You just brought up you know, the appointment of emergency managers for school districts. Let's talk about Detroit for a second. The governor just signed a package of legislation that the legislature sent him that reforms the Detroit public schools. Do you think the legislature did a good job there?
I think that the situation, what I would like to see happen for start with the Detroit public schools is that the state takes some responsibility for the fact that it hasn't been the Detroit public schools calling the shots for the last several years. We have had no fewer than 5 emergency managers, again, state appointed, unaccountable emergency managers with no education background required running this school district, you know, when it was in a deficit and in a state of financial crisis. And under that leadership, these individuals have rolled through and actually put the state or the school district in worse financial shape than when the state first intervened. So we have a great deal of responsibility there. And a change that I would like to see is if you're going to intervene at the state level, at the very least, you should have a team of professionals that include educators who can really speak to the educational needs of the children in those district in the districts that are affected.
So there is legislation passed that kind of spins off a new district and sets up a way to pay down the debt that's owed. How could you make it better?
Again, I think you have to look at these school districts that are struggling because of loss of property tax value over time and loss of student population and treat it as a holistic thing where you're dealing with children and children's lives and make sure that if you're going to intervene, you work with the community instead of completely silencing them, as is the case in with the power given to an emergency manager. And make sure that you're sending people in who are qualified to make decisions that impact children's lives. One of the most recent emergency managers was Darnell Early, who came directly from Flint, where he had presided over the situation there with the poisoning of an entire city, including thousands of children. So it feels like we're throwing stuff at the wall to see what fits, you know, or what sticks, and not really treating it with the gravity that it requires, that you're dealing with children's lives, and especially children in poverty. You have to look at that in sort of its whole scenario and not just, well, they're losing money, so we're going to go in and send in an accountant to slash the budget. These are children, and they are future citizens of Michigan who we need to be productive and well-educated, and that takes more than just bean counting and cutting corners.
If you're elected in November, who are some people you could see yourself working with to form some kind of consensus in Lansing? What some other senators or representatives, assuming they get reelected?
Sure. You know, I think that there are our representatives from rural areas in particular, whether Democrat or Republican, we share some of the same frustrations with low per pupil funding, for example, and some of the power of the districts downstate that have been able to keep that issue from really being a front burner issue. So I would be looking for collaboration with folks from particularly rural districts who are experiencing some of the same challenges with inequity in pupil funding and really understand, and they're hearing it from their voters, whether they're Democrat or Republican, like invest in our kids, go to bat for our kids to get a fair amount of money to invest in their education. So that describes most of this region. And I, you know, I will work with whomever to achieve the goals of serving my district. You know, I honestly am so much less interested in whatever label they happen to have and more in where can we find some common ground. I mentioned Ruth Johnson earlier. She's not a legislator. However, she had a really good idea there with going after the lack of transparency in these issue ads. And I would support and back those types of proposals from whomever they came and look for allies.
I guess one of the reasons I asked that is because, you know, the Detroit Public Schools bill passed with zero support from Democrats. You know, it seems like it's a time when Republicans and Democrats aren't working together on much legislation, or at least on some of these hot topic issues. What's an example of legislation that you think could gain traction? Like what's something that you're behind that you think could succeed, you know, assuming that there's still going to be a split, you know, in the legislature? You know, it might go to the Democrats, we're not sure. Mm-hmm. But what's some legislation that you think has the power to kind of break through the partisan divide that's, you know, going on in Lansing right now?
Yeah, that's a very frustrating situation, and honestly, that's part of why I am modeling the way I think it should be. We should have representatives who are not beholden so much to their party bosses or various special interest groups and more free to just ask the question, how is this good for my district and my state? I mentioned just a minute ago looking to other representatives from rural areas that are dealing with some of the same issues that we are here with school funding and infrastructure, et cetera. So I would be looking for that kind of collaboration. And again, it's not as nearly as important to me what label a person has as it is to just say, well, you know, how can we collaborate and find some common ground for to do our job, to do what the people actually sent us here to do. And I have to believe that there is that desire among our representatives. So, yeah.
When you're going door to door and you're talking to people in the street, what's your 30-second pitch to voters? It doesn't have to be 30 seconds exactly.
I was going to say, I'm a politician. We are never short-winded. I introduce myself. I tell them I'm from the area. I am really committed to building the kind of Michigan that I want to live in. And I see that we have a problem right now where our elected officials are more accountable to their party bosses and the special interests who fund their campaigns than they are to the voters. And I think we deserve better than that. And I'm here walking the walk on that issue. I don't take a penny from special interests or parties because I want my voters to be my only special interest. And I am here to introduce myself, and I'm here to hear from you, David, what is important to you as a voter. If you felt like you were being well represented in Lansing, what would that look like? And then I listen. And they often give me the time of day because I have that distinction of actually walking the walk on this concern of money in politics.
Any other question I didn't ask that I should have?
I'm really excited about the opportunity that we have in this district. We took nearly 47% of the vote in 2014, and frankly, one of the toughest years for the Democratic side in a very long time. It was very low turnout statewide, but our campaign, a state house campaign, outperformed the governor, U.S. Senate, and congressional race by 2 percentage points, even though in the last week and a half of the race, the state GOP and dark money groups, the GOP spent more against my race than the other 109 House seats in the last 10 days of the race. And there was a dark money group called the Faith and Freedom Coalition that had to have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we still came so much closer than anyone ever has that's coming from my side of the ticket. So I'm really excited about the traction that our message gets. Whether you're a Democrat, an independent, a green, or a Republican, you want representatives who work for you. You want people who are accountable to you. And this is very much a crossover issue. We have a lot of support. We will continue to work for more support. And I think I'm really excited about our chances in November.
Betsy Kafia, nice to talk.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.